Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
This is True Crime Cast, and I'm Jamie, as always, with John, with a special episode today.
Yeah, we have, I don't think ever done this, but we have a case update that we wanted to share and kind of incorporate that into a previously played episode.
Yeah, it's in part because it's personal. Rachel Marin, we'll get into all the details in a few minutes, but John had a personal connection to her family. This episode contains an interview with her brother, and there's been resolution to the case in a lot of ways, so we wanted to come on and share that, but we didn't want to do it without the content of the story. So we're going to go into the story. This is an episode that aired about a year ago, and then follow up with details about what has happened recently in the case and where things currently stand.
Yeah, it's you know, something that everyone involved in this case was praying for, and I think I think it's the best case scenario. Nothing's going to ever bring back Rachel, but at least her family can rest knowing that justice has been served. So we want to let you listen to the original episode, and then we'll be right back and share kind of the updates. Well, yeah, man, lady that I went to college with, her name is Megan. She and I were friends in college, and we've remained friends once we've graduated. Feels weird to say that was over 20 years ago.
That's insane, yeah.
But unfortunately, her and her husband have just been struck by tragedy, and in more ways than one. But on the way that we're going to talk about today involves the murder of her husband's sister. And her name is Rachel Marin. And Rachel was in the middle of six children. She was born and raised in New Hampshire. And these kids were all homeschooled by their mother, Patty. And she recalls Rachel being the most sensitive and insecure child. She grew up with a terrible stutter. And like kids do, they picked on her. And it was relentless at times. But Rachel worked hard as she grew up to not let her stutter define her life or to interfere with it. Her brother, Michael, said that Rachel just owned it. She went with it, and she made it part of who she was.
Rachel grew up to be a woman who loved fashion. She loved fitness. She loved to run 5Ks. She ran marathons. She was a weightlifter. She's really proactive at staying physically healthy. She loved to travel, and she was the life of the party everywhere she went. She was great at making people laugh, and I know we say that about most murder victims, but it's truly the case here with Rachel. More than anything, she was a passionate, devoted mother to her five children. She worked primarily cleaning houses to support her family and was a single mom. And John, you and I both have children. Both of our wives also work. I can't imagine just doing my job and being a father without somebody else there to help me. And I don't have as many kids as she does.
Lord, no. I mean, and you have double the amount of children that I do, but my wife had surgery over a week ago. And for like a solid week, I was doing everything. And it really made me appreciate my mom and all the single moms that I know, because I know they are just working tirelessly to keep things afloat, and they have to be exhausted.
Yeah.
So just bless her heart.
Yeah. Man. Kudos to anybody who's doing that kind of work. And she worked hard outside of the home to provide. So certainly doing things the right way.
On August 5th, this year, 2023, Rachel went out for an evening walk, and it would be on the trail that was well known. It was called the Ma and Pa Trail in Bel Air, Maryland. And kudos to her. I mean, she did have five kids. She had every reason in the world to say, I don't want to take care of myself. I just need to be at home. Or if there's like a 30-minute time where she doesn't have to do anything, she could have easily just laid down on the couch and not done squat.
Absolutely.
She wanted to take a walk. And she was last seen at 6 p.m. by her boyfriend. And it was her boyfriend that reported Rachel missing at 11:23 p.m. He told police where they would be able to find Rachel's car and they did in fact find it at the trailhead, but there was no sign of Rachel. The very next day, someone called 911 to report that they had found a woman's body along the trail, and unfortunately, it was Rachel. She was just 37 years old.
Hartford County Sheriff Jeffrey Gawler previously said that there are several indicators that left no doubt that Rachel had been murdered. This wasn't an accident. This wasn't a situation where she got sick on the trail and fell off the side of a cliff or anything like that. Now, they've not released specific details about her death or even the specific cause of death, because they're trying to keep that close to their vest and make sure that in this investigation, they hold the cards. But they do refer to as what happened to her as a violent homicide, which is a horrible phrase to hear about anybody that you love. The sheriff went on to say, this is not something that was self-inflicted. This was the action of one or more persons who took her life in a criminal homicide. An egregious, horrific act in what's otherwise a very, very safe area. So this was obviously a spot that she felt safe walking in. We live in an area with walking trails absolutely everywhere, John, and there's some of them that feel safer than others. But generally, if my wife said, I'm going to go out for a walk, I'm going to go walk on this trail, the majority of the time, especially during daylight, I wouldn't even think twice about it being dangerous.
Yeah. Jamie, there was a major break in this case just a little over a week after Rachel's murder. On August 17th, investigators told reporters that DNA found on Rachel's crime scene had been analyzed and entered into CODIS, and it matched evidence collected from a March home invasion all the way across the country in Los Angeles, where a young girl was assaulted. Now, the attack in L.A. took place in the early morning hours of March 26th, 2023, and the suspect in that case has not been identified, but they do have doorbell video footage that was obtained and given to the LAPD from the house from where that home invasion took place. The doorbell footage has been posted all over the place, but specifically on the Hartford County's sheriff's social media accounts. And it shows a young man wearing pants but no shirt. He was carrying a piece of clothing and left through the front door of that home in Los Angeles. Authorities said that they are looking for a man of Hispanic descent in his early to mid-20s, approximately 5'9" and 160 pounds. They have DNA matched to this man, but we have no idea who it is.
Yeah, and usually when we see those CODIS matches, it's from somebody who's in prison, who's committed other crimes a long time ago. I haven't heard of a lot of anonymous matches like this, especially this close together. This was less than 5 months after this home invasion that the same person's DNA was found on Rachel all the way across the country. He could not have been much further away from Los Angeles when he committed this crime. So, in one hand, I'm thrilled that we have a system in place that can identify that. On the other hand, I'm just really hopeful that we can figure out the identity of this person. Authorities have released the footage and photos from that everywhere, like John said, and this made headlines around the world, and it's led to more than 600 tips as far away as Canada, England, and Australia that have come in of people trying to identify the man on this video. Hartford County investigators have been in touch with the LAPD to share any and all information on the investigation. And John, we've covered a lot of cases that it's tough for police departments sometimes to share information with other departments in their area. I get that we have all the technology in the world, but being able or having to partner with a police agency across the country certainly has its challenges. The law firm representing Rachel's family started the Rachel Marin Reward Fund to help incentivize people to provide information that could lead to the prosecution of this individual. As of October 2nd, an anonymous woman in Bel Air added $10,000 to the reward fund, bringing it in total to $30,000.
What's more disturbing is that this last month, the sheriff told reporters that this suspect could very well be a serial killer. He said, "My concern is that this killer is escalating. My investigators and I both firmly believe that if we do not apprehend this individual, he will kill again if he has not already done so. This suspect poses a threat to every community in our country and maybe even outside of the country," end quote.
We've discussed before how it's hard to believe that serial killers are still happening now with all the technology and all the tracking that we have of people, but this is a reality. This individual assaulted somebody in their home and then committed a murder across the country. I think escalation is definitely on the table. And we're going to take a break and come back and talk more about Rachel, what people can do to help, and hear from a family member about this investigation. Of course, another episode of True Crime Cast and another recommendation for Magic Mind. Guys, this time of year, it's dark almost the entire day. I have a tough time staying focused and staying alert, and Magic Mind has been really like magic for me and my productivity. It seems like I always have energy and I always have focus, and when it runs out, there is no crash. Even if I take a couple days off, there's no big crash. I just miss it.
Dude, I've been working like burning the midnight oil, so to speak. I've been writing for a new show of Left on Dead, but also got to crank out a Patreon episode. And I'm just tired between the holidays, family stuff, wrapping up a busy work year. Magic Mind has helped me be able to focus, have less stress, and definitely get my creative juices flowing, brother.
So many awesome ingredients make this happen, like Bacopa Monnieri, which is a nootropic that improves your attention span, your ability to process and learn new information, and your memory, which are all things I feel like I struggle with at this time of my life.
Yeah. Like, dude, also, I was just in a play where I had to memorize a lot of lines for my very first play.
Saw that. Good job.
And I feel like Magic Mind helped me like be in a bit better mental space for that. So just, I could go on and on about how much I love Magic Mind.
Yeah. Can't recommend it highly enough. Definitely one of our favorite sponsors of all time. And in January, going to be coming to Sprout stores near you.
Starting in January, you'll find it in all Sprouts Farmers Market stores across the country. If you have a Sprout store nearby, get down there and grab a few bottles to try. After you're hooked, you can also get a subscription with 50% off going to magicmind.com/truecrimecast and use the code truecrimecast for 50% off.
It's very fortunate that the fund was set up to provide a reward for the capture and prosecution of the individual responsible for Rachel's murder, but there are other ways you can support this family as well. They've set up a GoFundMe campaign to support Rachel's kids. Rachel did not have an active life insurance policy, and the kids could really need support in every facet of their lives. And yet another heartbreaking piece to this puzzle is that they couldn't keep Rachel's kids together. And I know you work in this role every day as a social worker, as a foster parent. I was a part of some of these situations where if you have five kids, it's hard to find one home that is able to accommodate a group of that size, a sibling group of that size. They were ranging from 8 to 18 in age. And while they're not able to live together in one roof right now, they are in the same town, and a family member actively gets them together regularly for different activities in the area. So they're not removed from each other's lives, but still obviously not in a good situation or the best situation for a group of siblings. Rachel's mother, Patty, says that the family is worried about all the children. They've already been through so much, and now it's not like they just landed in a safe, productive place for them to grow and develop. So that's an ongoing concern of caring for the kids while they're also still trying to find the killer and bring some justice to this situation.
We are going to go ahead and go into that interview with Rachel's brother, Nathan.
Nathan, thanks for giving us your time. Why don't you just tell us a little bit about Rachel?
Ever since she was young, she was just, full of life, energy, and, you know, love and happiness. And I reflect back to some of the pictures of her when she was younger, just a little thing, and always smiling from ear to ear, you know, just kind of kept that mindset and that attitude, you know, becoming a young adult and, you know, a woman and, you know, a beautiful young mother, very hardworking, dedicated to family and whatever she was doing. You know, she was doing it 100%. You know, she stayed healthy. She ate well. She loved to exercise. You know, unfortunately, when she was in high school, you know, she had that carrot top red hair that was everywhere, kind of like Meredith, you know, and she had the you know, unfortunate acne that teens can get, and kids can be cruel, you know, and she got picked on a lot, brought in some, you know, self-conscious feelings and emotions, and she did well with them, I think, a part of that, and leading up to, you know, what I was just saying is, you know, her consistency with, you know, trying to maintain her beauty and her health, you know, was really a big part of that. You know, she didn't quite see herself as beautiful as she really was. And she's a beautiful, beautiful woman. And yeah, I mean, she worked hard. She was an understudy for a good friend of ours who had a good sized cleaning company in the county that we lived in. You know, she saved up some money and she actually purchased that company, from her. You know, she did very well, self-employed. She worked really hard to take care of, you know, all her kids. Her, one of her daughters, they were, autistic and, you know, pretty far down the spectrum and need a lot of care. And Rachel's, you know, everything she had on her plate, you know what I mean? She was an amazing mom to those kids. But then, yeah, you know, when it was time to take a break and relax and have some fun, I mean, she was the life of the party. You know, she didn't really care to go out there and drink right crazy, but, you know, she would go out and, you know, she'd go dancing and hanging out with friends. You know, you knew, you know, when this 5 foot nothing walked into a room, you know, and whether it was, you know, going out and having some fun and dancing, or if it was just, you know, hanging out at home with, you know, us brothers and sisters, just playing board games, you know, just her contagious laugh, you know, her beautiful smile. You know, honestly, there's really no negative thing, you know, I could say about her, and, you know, not just because she's passed away now, but, you know, she was a fiery spirit and she just loved and enjoyed life, and she knew how to love and take care of people. And, you know, it's just, that's probably one of the most tragic things, is not that someone has taken away, you know, our sister, you know, our Rachel, but they extinguished, you know, a light that should have had the ability to shine way more.
Something that I took away from researching your sister was, I mean, I just can't believe it sounds like she was just an incredible mother, and for her to take time to care for herself, you know, by doing all the exercise that she was doing and the walking, Jamie and I just mentioned in our pre-recorded session that, you know, just kudos to her for, you know, knowing that she needed to take care of herself in order to take care of other people. And it sounds like she was just an incredible mom. So you talked about extinguishing the light, and I just hate that, you know, you've lost a sister, they've lost a mom, and so many people are impacted by this. So my heart just breaks for everybody involved. Can you tell us, I guess, how you got the news that this had happened?
Yes. And that's a very interesting aspect to the story. So she had gone out on Saturday, part of her normal routine, especially in the hotter months. You know, she'd go out later in the evening, still plenty of light, to go running. She was an avid runner. I go running with her often. But she had gone out that Saturday, and we had got the phone call Sunday morning that she was essentially missing. And they had found her car at the trailhead. And, you know, she was, So the car was found at the trailhead, and they started the search. I got the phone call from the family that this was just going on. You know, we were hoping it was just something, you know, silly. Maybe she had a fight with her boyfriend. But I feel like we all kind of knew, you know, because she wouldn't have just left her kids and not tell them, you know, what she was doing or just not come home. We all kind of had this gut feeling. And my mom and my older sister were actually at my house, because that Friday, my wife and I buried our four-month-old daughter that passed away from SIDS. So it was already a sobering mood in our house here. And fortunately enough, I still had an app that was the Harford County police radio scanner. And we were tuning into that. And it was a little after lunchtime where we had heard, and I'm quoting, that they found her. It wasn't specific to Rachel, but they had said on the radio they found her, her body. And then they were all told to go to a different channel, code something. Basically, it's a secure line for these guys to talk without the public being able to hear what was going on. So just knowing that, I contacted my family back home. They were actually at the trailhead. And they were just saying that they were patiently waiting to find out what was going on. And while I was on the phone with them, a detective had walked over and told my family that they had found Rachel and she was deceased.
Man, I mean, that is just, that news in and of itself is awful and heartbreaking to hear. But to know that your mom, her mom was there with you because of everything that you had going on, I honestly cannot imagine what you went through that day, what you've been going through. So our prayers continue to be with you and your wife and your family.
Yeah. It was tough for my mom. She had drove out here, and, you know, if you drive it straight, it's like 11 hours. You know, normally we, if they're coming out here or if my family's heading back that way, you know, we stop halfway. So, you know, it took another 2 days. You know, once she was able to emotionally get over, or not get over, but get through, you know, to be able to drive, you know, it's still another 2 days before she could even get out there. And, you know, it's pretty difficult for her because, you know, she wanted to be there right then and there.
I found it just shocking that a few or just a couple of weeks after her body was discovered, that there was actually a DNA profile linked to a home invasion on the opposite side of this country.
Yes, you're referring to the LA case. Yep.
And so I don't know. I can draw a lot of speculation on what's going on here, but I don't know. How do you handle that news? And do you feel like everyone is doing what they need to do to try to track down this guy?
In the sense that it is speculation and, you know, just my opinion, we'll base this off of, and I'll give you an example, just my personality in itself. You know, if I had information like this, man, I don't think I'd be going to bed at night. You know, I think I'd be working this thing and, you know, grinding these gears, you know, with the information. Now, again, I'm not in the field, you know, I'm not, you know, a detective, you know, I'm not sure how these things work, the politics, you know, the resources that you can gain or be allowed to have. But, you know, I feel like, you know, we should have more by now. And just, you know, the fact that the information about, you know, Rachel's life and who she was as a person, not that she's anything more special than any other case. But I mean, you know, when we had the memorial walk for her, thousands of people in the community came out, and a lot of them knew Rachel. you know, personally, you know, and just the lives that she had touched. And I mean, I feel like more could be done, but at the same time, like, who really knows how much is being done and what they have. And I've spoken with some friends of mine in law on task force and, you know, even military intelligence. And, you know, they're saying like, hey, once they catch this guy, he still needs to be prosecuted. And they don't want any holes, you know, to where this guy can slip through. And that doesn't make sense to me. But at the same time, you know, I haven't had the word or any contact, you know, from, you know, anyone in weeks. So it's a little disheartening.
Yeah, I was wondering if they keep you, you know, kind of in the loop on what's being done. And I guess I understand why they wouldn't on some things, but, you know, if I put myself in your shoes, I would want to know everything.
I was just going to say it would be nice to know as much as they do, but at the same time, you know, with social media and podcasts and everything else, you know, you put the wrong information out there or something, and this guy gets caught, and he's like, well, I know this because it was on a podcast.
Right.
So.
So he had, there's footage of this guy on a doorbell, I think in LA, if I'm not mistaken. Yes.
Correct.
And that was a home invasion. Did the person that was attacked in that home invasion live, or were they also murdered?
No, they were, there was no, death or murder there. And I don't want to give out any false information, so I'll just, you know, say it this way. I believe it was a 17-year-old female, and due to the fact that she's a minor, and probably other reasons, her information was not given out. And they're not really saying how they collected the DNA, whether it was through semen or skin under the fingernails, if, you know, she's scratching on him to get him away. But the crazy thing is, if you watch the video, there's somebody basically kicking this guy out of the house. You can see a hand right at the end. And then he just kind of walks off like, you know, nothing really happened.
Man, I'm struggling on what to say. I feel like that is the key to busting your sister's case, though, is I feel like there has to be way more information known in LA that could, you know, really be useful in your sister's case. And I just hope that they are really digging into that and finding out everything they can. I wondered, in my mind, I'm speculating, but, you know, was this somebody that was known to this family? Are they able to, you know, do they have this guy's name now and they're just not telling you about it? Was this a random attack? I don't know. Just so many questions.
Yeah, there's so many questions, and, you know, you could really beat yourself up trying to fill in the blanks on your own and try to, you know, create a narrative on this, that, and the other, just, you know, because you want to see justice. You know, sometimes myself and my family members, it's kind of like, just got to relax for a minute and, you know, really stop overthinking it. But you're right. There's so much there, though, that it just kind of like makes you question, like, what's going on? Like, more than just, you know, if they had no suspects, you know, I mean, that would make more sense. But, you know, clearly, you know, this guy is our guy, you know, and the fact that in the camera, you know, he turns his head sideways enough that you can see his nose and his profile. You know, the biggest thing is we really believe that there's somebody out there that knows who he is, and they're just not willing to give up any information. If you don't mind me continuing, our family lawyer had put up the funding to get 10,000 flyers made up. If you guys refer to some of the information that I was sharing there on Facebook, it's one side's in English, one side's in Spanish, because they believe the suspect is Hispanic. With the pictures of him on there and contact information. And yeah, 10,000 went out to the neighborhood in LA, to be canvassed and put out through the mail. Which we also did here, in Maryland as well, surrounding the trail where she was on. So we're just hoping that, you know, someone just realizes that, you know, whether it's a friend or a family member, you know, this person can't be walking the streets and doing this. If he's done this twice, you know, what's going to stop him from doing it again?
Right. We have some contacts that we can ask if, you know, we can pull that flyer from your Facebook and share it on our social media, and we can ask some of our friends in the podcast world to hopefully do the same thing for us. It's interesting. Yeah, yeah. Like, there has to be a connection. Like, why is this guy in LA and then in Maryland? Like, it's such a huge trip. So I'm just curious as to the why. Like, does this person have a job that makes him travel? You know, it's interesting. And I think hopefully people can see the flyer and say, oh, I know this guy has to travel for this and this and this. Hopefully that can spark some memories or spark something.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is where Rachel's body was found, it was in a 6-foot drainage tunnel back in the woods. And if you weren't a local, if you didn't know that area, there's no way you would see or find these tunnels unless you decided to go off the beaten path and just explore. The location on the trail is right on a almost 90 degree kind of turn with at least a half mile stretch both ways where you can see clearly down the trail. So, you know, my speculation is this guy had to be more familiar with Maryland than just taking a trip and seeing a victim, more than just, you know, walking the trail, because of where he could have hid, where he could see in both directions for such a long distance, and then 40 yards through the brush to these tunnels, which go under a highway exit to where there's lots of car noise and everything like that. I mean, it was a wild location for the situation. And, you know, that just leads me to believe that he has to have friends, family, you know, people he know, you know, in that town to be able to know that spot.
As far as you know, there are no other links to his DNA with any other cases that you know of. And if you're not comfortable talking about that, we certainly don't have to.
No, as of right now, it's just those two connected. If I remember correctly, in one of the reports the sheriff did, and you can kind of tell in his wording what he meant, he was speaking about the LA case, and the way he was talking, it was kind of like they were dealing with their case and not quick to, I guess, work hand in hand quickly together to like figure this out. They're still cooperating, giving information, but again, they have their own case to solve. And who knows, you know, I mean, LA is a big area. How much work are these detectives out there trying to do?
Right. That's what bothers or worries me rather. We have cases here in our neck of the woods in Kentucky that unfortunately have went cold, and the longer it takes for detectives to do their job and to get this guy and to get him in a way where he can't fall through the cracks and get out on a technicality or a loophole, I know it takes a lot to put on the guy. I've seen cases where it takes the FBI stepping in to really do the work that it needs. Any chance the FBI could come in and offer assistance, or are they already doing so?
So when everything first came about, there were FBI agents that had come in to assist. The length and the amount and what they actually have done is really unclear. They're keeping that pretty tight to the chest as well, but they FBI is involved. And then once the case was linked to LA, I believe that they had returned to reevaluate the case. But again, you know, how many agents, what did they do? You know, it's not being said.
Yeah. I guess it makes me feel better that the FBI is involved, but I've seen the more publicity on a case, I feel like the harder they tend to work. So it really is the squeaky wheel gets the grease. So I hope you and your family just call and bug the crap out of them every single day, every couple of days.
And not just you guys, Anybody who hears this, call and bug the crap out of them until they do a little bit more. And I guess we're a little over 4 months since the incident. And how is publicity locally? Has the story kind of fizzled? Is it still out there and active? I know you may not live there now, but what is your sense of how hard the public is pushing locally?
Like you said, not out there now, but I still keep in contact often, you know, with everyone and just, you know, try to stay in the loop. The story itself, you know, it is fizzling. Social media and some other platforms, you do have these TikTokers that like to do these stories. You know, they're trying to step in and do what you guys do and get to podcasts and all that. They'll mention it, they'll bring it up. So you'll still kind of see spurts of it here and there. But the fact that there's a lack of any new information being shared is really detrimental, you know, to her story. And if there's nothing new to talk about, you know, people aren't going to talk about it. But that's why I appreciate, you know, you guys bringing me on and getting this thing on another cast and keeping it going. You know, I was really hoping that it would be, you know, more lively and talked about. I mean, this thing did go international, but like, you know, I was saying, once that information dials out, you know, people just start losing interest in the story.
I feel like I remember seeing that there were tips called in from, I mean, like you said, like worldwide. So interesting to me, you know, how does a person get from LA to Maryland? Does this person have, you know, what other traveling are they doing?
Yeah. What are their means and resources? And that until we get an identity, I don't know that we will know that. Is the public, as far as to like, are people, I know this was a popular area to go hiking. So if anybody saw anything or are all the tips going to the right places? Has anybody tried to pass tips along to your family? Like what's the interaction there? Cause I understand this must be incredibly difficult for you and others to talk about, but if you're not talking about it, nobody else is going to. So what's that dichotomy, I guess, like for you of talking about it and keeping it personal while you're emotionally healing or trying to?
Yeah, I feel, you know, talking about it is the most important thing to do for Rachel. You know, keep her story going. Do not let it get so cold that, you know, you ask somebody about it and they're like, what? What do you know? I didn't even know that happened. So, you know, as painful as it can be sometimes, you know, especially, you know, going on shows or, you know, a couple news networks we had gone on, it's more important to talk about it, keep the story going, then, you know, worry about our emotions in the moment and, you know, take time, you know, we take time to reflect, but, you know, we also take time to just relax and not forget about her, but just decompress from overthinking and wondering and speculating and, you know, just remember the good times and the good moments and, you know, look at pictures and remember stories and the goofiness and the good times we've had. So, we just try to keep it, you know, well balanced. Keep her story alive. You know, that's what we want.
And that's what we want too. We want, you know, as many people as possible to hear this and to remember Rachel and to remember that justice has yet to be served. And, you know, our prayers are with you guys, man. And that justice can be served soon. sooner than later.
And we're going to give out contact information for local police. But what other ways can people help support this cause? Sharing stories, obviously, online. Are there other contacts people can make, or tip lines, or any of those other things that the listeners or anybody that hears about this can do to help?
Yes, there is a contact phone number and a tip line email. Again, on that flyer.
Okay.
You guys can use those two.
Yeah, we'll put that in our show notes and read it on the episode as well. But we got that information, I think.
So other than that, there's really nothing else, no other contact sources. And the Harford County Sheriff's, great, great group of people up there. They keep that county, properly in check. But at the same time, it's such a small town in consideration of, the type of resources that are out there and available to some of these bigger cities or divisions or states. So I'm sure it's so hard to sift through, thousands of tips. I mean, there's people, I've seen people taking pictures of some guy riding a bike down the side of the road and hey, this looks like the guy. Or I've seen a picture of a young man, at a restaurant, which looks like he was eating with his girlfriend. And they're like, hey, I think this is the guy, he's eating here now, come and get him. So there's probably so much pouring in, and to sift through all that, yet trying not to just bypass the lead because it doesn't look good enough, but may actually be the lead that could solve the case. So I'm pretty sure they're quite overwhelmed. I don't know the resources they have. I wish we did. I wish they would give up more information, or, if they need more help, figure out a way to get more help going through leads. Just the longer this thing takes, the colder it's going to get.
I want to respect the privacy of her children, but any resources that they need that we can point our listeners to?
I know there was a GoFundMe that is active for them. And, a lot of times these days when people hear GoFundMe, there's a bit of a cringe because everyone's trying to utilize that for personal gain. But I just want to let everyone know that it is being taken care of by our family lawyer, and the money is going to be put into a trust. We decided to do this so that every nickel, dime, and penny could be accounted for, and just transparency on the fact that, this is going to go to put up for these beautiful children. She has five of them, to be able to take care of their needs properly and not have the funds misused.
That's good. And I'm happy to point our listeners to that as well, so we can link some show notes to that as well. So if anybody feels, up to giving, it is the Christmas season, and, it'd be a great way to show this family that we love them and praying for them and are happy to put our money where our mouth is. So we'll be happy to put that in our show notes as well.
And we know the connection to LA was made pretty quickly after, within a few weeks. Have you gotten, whether you can share or not, any major updates since then, or are you guys really kind of kept in the dark and, I guess in an effort of the integrity of the investigation?
Yeah, basically, if you pay attention to, and I know it's hard to get every little detail, everything that's said or that comes out from the sheriff's office or any other sources, reputable sources. We know just the same thing that the public does. In the beginning, there was a few details that didn't come out. At this point, there's no reason for me to speak on them. They'd almost be out of contact at this point. But other than that, we know what you guys know, which it's a little disheartening. And I just keep holding on to that thought that, no leaks, for the prosecution, and I'm putting my faith in that. But I mean, at the same time, you know, who wouldn't want to know? I mean, why are people interested in this? Because they want justice. And people just want to know the why and the where and the who and the what. And, you know what I mean? So they can wrap their mind around, you know, what has happened. So.
Well, and also to prevent it from happening to anybody else. I mean, it sounds like this guy's, you know, maybe escalating at this point. So who's to say there's not been more or will be more?
Definitely escalation. And again, we don't know the information. This is sheer speculation. But, you know, if this suspect, you know, raid on this young lady in L.A. and, you know, he was just out there to sexually assault. And, you know, thankfully, you know, she lived to give information. But, you know, then to come out here and, you know, brutally, you know, murder Rachel. You know, I do want to add, she was a feisty, fiery, spirited redhead. And I can tell you without a doubt that she did not go down without a fight. I guarantee she kicked, clawed, and, you know, whatever she had to do. But, you know, when you're 5 foot nothing, 105 pounds, you know, it's not too much she could do, you know, a young man like that.
Well, but that does tell us the kind of person we're looking for. Definitely probably had some signs of a struggle after that. And we're looking for somebody who, has been through a fight. And with all the developments in DNA technology and what we're seeing with familial DNA, those kinds of things, super hopeful and optimistic. But as you said, the time is of the essence at this point, both to not let the trail grow colder and to prevent other people from getting hurt. So we're happy to air updates or share whatever you have. If things become available, to do whatever little bit we can to help.
Well, like we talked earlier with, you know, information that I do have on my personal Facebook page, which you guys are allowed to sift through and utilize anything that you feel is necessary. There is a criminal profile write-up by Dr. Brown. She's a criminal psychologist, I believe. Don't quote me on that. But she had written up basically bullet points on who this guy is and what you should be looking for. And that would be a good thing for you guys to share as well. She did a very good job on that. And that is also on my Facebook page.
Okay. I appreciate that, man. We'll be respectful of your time. Just want to say thanks again for coming on and talking about this. I can't imagine it's easy to talk about, but understand the need of keeping this fresh in the public's eyes so that hopefully justice can be served sooner than later. So Nathan, we appreciate it, and our prayers are with you guys, man.
Yep, and we appreciate you guys having us. You know, like I said, you know, there's not too many people calling us up for the headline story anymore. You know, everyone comes calling right off the bat, and they want to know everything, and they want to be the first ones to share the news. So we do appreciate you guys wanting to continue the story and speaking with us.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, it's always powerful and chilling to talk to people involved who are directly implicated. So we certainly thank Nathan for giving us his time. John, that was tough.
It was tough. I appreciate Nathan coming on and talking about his sister and the case. And it's incredibly hard, I'm sure, for him to talk about, but so very, very important to keep her case fresh in the public's eyes, because we need to see justice for Rachel. We need to see justice for the young woman in LA, and ultimately we need to stop this guy from hurting more women.
Yeah. And as we said during the interview, we're going to go ahead and play the clip of the profiler being interviewed on Dan Abrams Live over on News Nation. So let's hear what the profiler has to say.
Joining us now is Pat Brown. She is an investigative criminal profiler who's working with Rachel Marin's family to try to generate leads on her killer. Pat, thanks a lot for coming on the program. I have to appreciate it. I have to tell you, I am surprised that they haven't found this guy yet. And I only say that because the video is clear enough that if someone would recognize him, if they know him, they would say, oh, yeah, that's the guy you're not.
Well, Dan, it's the back of his head. That is the problem. And it is curious how nobody has identified him yet. But the important thing is his DNA is there from that crime, and his DNA is in the Rachel Morin crime. And that is what is so fascinating, because this at least identifies the killer. Although we don't know his name, we know who it is.
Yeah.
But the most important thing now is to have people identify him, because unless they identify him, you know, we can wait on the DNA, maybe matching at some point in time, but we need to identify him. And that's why I wrote this profile up. It's not just a profile. It's actually a 5-bullet-point chart. And let me explain that.
Tell us about it. Yeah.
Please. This is so important. I have been arguing for years that when you go to the public and you ask them for information, what you don't want to do is just say, hey, if you know anything, give us a ring. And people say, what is it I'm supposed to know? So I have always pushed for the police releasing some sort of bullet point chart. Here is what you need to be looking for. You know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Then people can see that and send in decent tips to the department, to the police, instead of a whole bunch of nonsense. I want to point out, just to be very clear about this, the family came to me and asked if I could help. I put this together. This is pro bono. But I also said to the family, check with the Harford County Sheriff's Office and be sure they approve of this, because I'm not working with them and I don't want to interfere with the investigation. And they went to them, and the Harford County Sheriff's Office did say it's okay to disseminate this. So I was very pleased that they essentially approved of the flyer that was going to go out to the community and had these very important 5 points on it.
So we've been showing a graphic of the 5 points that you laid out. What do you think is the most important thing? I mean, obviously you'd like people to read the whole thing, right? I understand that. But if there is, you know, if there's anything in here which is particularly significant for people to think about, that might help trigger what you're talking about, right? Which is someone saying, okay, I don't necessarily recognize this guy, but.
Right. Well, the problem is the but, Dan. So first of all, he said a suspected serial killer. He said danger to the community. He's a psychopath. Please read up on my things about a psychopath. Narcissistic. He lies. He takes advantage of you. He only cares about himself. But three, he came from L.A. to Bel Air. Bel Air is 40 minutes northeast of Baltimore. Why is he there? Because this is not a normal place you just jump off of a bus and end up. So he had to know somebody there. So there is someone in Bel Air who knows him. And then they have to know that he is near that trail for some reason. He's either running on it or he's living near there, working near there. And the fifth one is he had to be missing between 6 p.m. on August 5th until dusk. Those are the 5 points. I'm sorry I pushed them, but I want all 5 points heard by the community. It's very, very important.
Look, I'm all for you laying them all out. I think it's important for you to provide the context, too. Because, look, if anything triggers someone who's listening or watching to say, oh, actually, you know, here's something I can add, right? Because even if they don't know him per se, they may have something to add. They may have tip.
Somebody does know him, Dan. The problem a lot of people have is they don't recognize what they should be looking for. And they also have to be willing to call the sheriff's department or send in some information, because no one likes to be a rat. You know what I mean?
Well, so, I don't know about that.
I don't want to.
I don't know about that. I got to tell you,
it's not my cousin.
Yeah, in a case like this, you know, considering the assault on a girl and the murder of a woman, people are going to be,
the guy's a suspected serial killer. Get him off the streets.
Yep. Pat Brown. Hey, thanks a lot for coming on the program. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Dan.
At the end of November of this year, Maryland installed a camera system to detect unusual activity and to help find people along the trail where Rachel was murdered. Harford County Executive Bob Casley said that the terrible murder of Rachel shocked our community, and we know that nothing we do can make up for her loss. What we can do is increase security in our most popular trail system and continue encouraging citizens to look out for one another and to keep themselves safe, end quote. Data that is collected by that system will be securely stored and made accessible to any law enforcement agency and emergency first responders who need that data. And I think this is a good measure taken, but I don't know, man, part of me wonders, like, this guy was in LA, he's in Maryland. Like, what is taking him that far away from one place to the other, and where could he be now?
And now for the updates. John, this was a case that we followed closely. We actually went on Talk as Jericho after the what everybody just heard aired and shared the story on there. And it wasn't long after that aired that there was a major break. Why don't you get us rolling on the update?
Yeah. So do you want to talk about how they found this guy?
Yeah, absolutely.
So they did have DNA evidence that was at the scene. It was actually on Rachel's body. In particular, it was on her Apple Watch. So the DNA did not match anyone in the U.S. criminal database, but it did match evidence from an assault in Los Angeles. And you heard us talk about the guy who was on the doorbell cam, right? You heard all that, but now we have that DNA match. Still didn't really know who the guy was, but the suspect in that earlier assault had never been caught, and the sample allowed detectives to perform familial DNA tracing. So while it may not find who that guy is, because we don't know that guy, if there's any connection anywhere through like ancestry, 23andMe, all those things, then we could finally potentially find a family member and really narrow down the suspect. So that's when they finally tracked down a man named Victor Antonio Martinez Hernandez. He was from Salvador. He was born there, but he illegally entered the United States in 2023.
Yeah, really great police work here. Familial DNA is primarily known for its work with the Golden State Killer, but it's being used more and more often. And this is the reason why they were able to track down the family of Martinez Hernandez, and they found out his identity. But by May of 2024, he was scarce and hard to find. They ended up finding his cousin in Prince George's County, Maryland, where he had been staying, which is how he got to Maryland and what happened with Rachel.
And see, I always wondered, like, how did this guy get from LA to Maryland? So now that piece of the puzzle is solved.
Absolutely. They tracked him down on June 4th of 2024. They got an arrest warrant, and they used a phone number provided by a family member to ping his location. That led police to Los Dos Amigos Sports Bar in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and they found Victor Martinez Hernandez there, and he was placed under arrest just hours after they pinged him there.
Yeah, he actually gave officers a fake name, Juan Carlos, but police recognized him by the distinctive gaps in his teeth. Probably not the most flattering thing I've ever said about anybody, but given what he's done, I don't care. He told police that he had never been to Maryland, that he had never hurt anyone because he served God. Well, you are a liar and a murderer. But the evidence told a very different story. So there was a trial, and I mean, golly, this is a fast situation that within months there's already a trial. But in trial, they presented some evidence, and they laid out a case against this guy using technology, timeline reconstruction. So first, Rachel's Apple Watch health data pinpointed the time of the attack. Her heart rate spiked to 115 beats per minute at 7:07 p.m., then dropped sharply to only 69 beats per minute by 7:09. And that two-minute window marked the brutal beginning of the end.
Her iPhone, which was an XR edition, was found smashed near the trail, but it was rebuilt by investigators, and they recovered text messages to her daughters. A 150-foot trail of blood led to Rachel's body in the drainage tunnel. As we talked about, she was severely injured. She had no clothes on. There were lots of cuts on her head and evidence of what we know is an extremely violent attack. That DNA, once they got a hold of him, they were able to get Martinez Hernandez's DNA, and they found it in multiple spots on Rachel's body. And blood spatter inside the tunnel matched his profile as well. Her Apple Watch, which again was found on the side of the trail, also had his DNA on it. So, John, this is a lot of physical evidence, and we don't get this in many cases.
Absolutely. And friends and coworkers testified in this trial, and they testified that he was living in Bel Air at the time of the murder. He was actually working at Popeyes and another local restaurant and staying with family the whole time. And there are surveillance video, there's phone data, home security footage placed him near the crime scene at the exact time we've been talking about. Even his Google search history showed that he searched Rachel Marin's name once or twice, but largely stayed silent in the months after her murder. Prosecutors said that he stayed in Bel Air for 4 months and was living in plain sight in that community.
The defense tried to push suspicion off on Rachel's boyfriend, Richard, saying he could have been involved, but he was cleared really early. We had covered that in earlier in this episode and talked about his suspicion. There were reports that there was a blonde guy in the woods when she disappeared, but that's not tracked back to Richard at all. And that was pretty readily dismissed. Prosecutors walked the jury step by step through the timeline, through the crime, using the mountain of evidence, both physical, technological, and circumstantial, that they had built. And they each defined a crime, and they actually put a check mark next to each crime every time the crimes being murder, rape, and sexual offense, every time a piece of information or a piece of evidence matched Victor to that particular charge, which I think that visual is pretty powerful.
Absolutely. And the jury thought so too. They deliberated for less than 1 hour. On April 14th, 2025, they returned a guilty verdict on all charges: first degree premeditated murder, first degree rape, third degree sexual offense, and kidnapping. In the courtroom, Rachel's family finally were able to breathe like a little bit of relief. And as I said earlier, nothing changes as far as Rachel. What is done is done. They lost a sister, a mom, a friend. But I guess if there's any peace in this story, it's knowing that the man who is responsible is held accountable, and this will never happen to another woman at his hands again.
Right. At least at his hands, like you said. During the arrest leading up to the trial, actually her mom, Patricia, went on the campaign trail during last year's election cycle talking about illegal immigration. And we found out that Victor Martinez Hernandez actually was wanted for a murder back in El Salvador. So this wasn't apparently his first violent crime. And this was really the second major story in that news cycle of an immigrant who is not legally in America taking the life of an American young woman. And it got a lot of publicity, and Patricia Marin got her name out there quite a bit. So what's next? Sentencing is scheduled for August 11th of 2025. So we're still several weeks away from sentencing. Prosecutors have requested life without the possibility of parole, which is the maximum penalty in Maryland. And Rachel's family will be allowed to deliver victim impact statements during that sentencing phase.
Yeah. So while we do have a lot of major updates, I mean, there is still more to come. In just a couple of months, he'll be sentenced. And that's something I'm really going to be paying attention to. August 11th, 2025 is the day to be watching for that. And I hope that there is I hope he is held accountable to the fullest extent of the law.
Yeah, I think the recommendation from the prosecution, I mean, like you said, there is no fair outcome here. There is nothing that's going to bring Rachel back. But the maximum sentence is absolutely what this guy deserves. I hope he gets it, and I hope his time in prison is not in any way pleasant. John, I don't know how much you've touched base with her family since the arrest was made. I know I think we emailed back and forth with her brother a little bit right after, but just so much relief from her family when he was arrested, even more relief when he was convicted. And I think after sentencing, hopefully they can start to move forward, not move on. It's not going to be over, but that you're not going to have to be in a courtroom reliving this over and over anymore.
Absolutely. And I'm just thankful that this is not a cold case. The work done by the FBI, by every law enforcement agency available, made this happen. And I'm just so thankful that we're not sitting here a year later with less answers than we did before. So we call it as we see it. If we think police dropped the ball, we say it. On this one, they picked it up, ran with it, and we would not be sitting here today without their hard work. So way to go, guys.
Yeah, good collaboration between the LAPD, the FBI, and the Hartford County Sheriff's Department. Everybody played a role in solving this one and bringing Martinez Hernandez to justice. But I hope you enjoyed this update episode. It's certainly great. Anytime I hear an update, to go back and refresh myself on the story that we're talking about. So let us know if you like this. We can do more of these or put them in some other format. We usually do updates like this over on Patreon, but this one was personal enough and thorough enough. We wanted to put it on the main feed.
Absolutely. Guys, we appreciate you. Please leave us a rating and review. Let us know what you thought and share this with your friends.
Yep. Thanks, guys. And glad for this time. Justice has been served.
Until next crime, this has been True Crime Cast.
You've listened to True Crime Cast, distributed by Stoveleg Media. Check out Stoveleg.com to find out more about your hosts and to find other podcasts to listen to. Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.